versus LNI.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Aaron O'Watt, and I represent Coluccio Construction Company, the appellant in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 moments for rebuttal, 3 minutes. As the Court is aware, this is a case under the Washington Industrial Safety and Health Act. A citation was issued to my client for a breach in a regulation that requires at least a 10-foot clearance. There is no dispute that in digging this trench, which was 250 feet long, 13 feet deep and 5 feet wide, that it needed to have a large Komatsu excavator in order to dig that deep and to push and pull the trench box so that the employees, when they're working inside of this trench, could be protected against cave-in hazards from the trench itself.
Mr. Owada, before yes. we get in, jump into the heart of it, I just want to be clear about whether or not you assigned error to any of the findings.
Yes, we did, Your Honor. We, in our notice of appeal, first of all, in the petition for review to the Board of Industrial Insurance of Appeals, we assigned error to findings 3, 5, and 6. Those were the same assignments of error filed to the Superior Court, and in our notice of appeal from the Superior Court decision from Judge Heller of the King County Superior Court, we assigned error in the notice of appeal to all the findings of fact in the Superior Court order.
That's his written order?
Yes, Your Honor. The interim, well, the written, the letter that was provided from the court.
And that's incorporated by reference in the order?
Yes, Your Honor. And in our brief, our opening brief, we took specific finding and assignment of error where it is impossible to keep the excavator more than 10 feet away from the electric trolley lines, and there was no feasible means to keep the excavator more than 10 feet away from the lines. Did the board err in not accepting the affirmative defense of impossibility of compliance? And
what did you show in the record related to whether there were feasible alternatives?
Well, Your Honor, there were no feasible alternatives.
Well, what evidence did you present to show there were no feasible alternatives?
Well, Mr. Brown and Mr. Mitchell, the operator, both testified the only way to do this work was to come within the 10-foot clearance. The regulation WAC 428 sub 20 subsection A clearly says that you must maintain a distance of at least 10 feet from this energized line. And they testified that in order to dig this trench, they had to come within 10 feet.
Well, I don't think that's disputed. But doesn't the statute require some mitigation or some feasible way of ensuring the safety of the operator and the public?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. If there are...
But don't you? Isn't that your burden to show, though?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's no feasible alternative. Wasn't there evidence in the record that shows that, I'll call it a kill switch, I don't know what the technical
limit
term
switch,
is,
Your
but
Honor.
I think you understand what I'm saying,
yes.
Or a nylon loopy thing.
Yes, the nylon sling.
Restricts it from going within 10 feet.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, and the possibility of asking Metro to simply cut off the power.
Yeah. By inference, I believe that the Metro line, in exhibit number 2, paragraph page 2, there's reference that Metro refused to turn off the power line, because obviously if they turn off the power lines.
This
is on exhibit 2, page 2.
Okay.
That Metro refused to cut off the power, because obviously if they cut off the power, then the buses wouldn't run. And the board granted that variance based on that application on March the 7th, 2011. The date of the citation was on February the 11th, about a month prior to that point in time.
Well, can you tell me where in the record where you explored other alternatives that were feasible?
The point, Your Honor, that what the department argues were the feasible alternatives were parts in Exhibit 1 for the variance. And that is as an overall encompassing program, because on February the 11th, 2011, Kalutri was cited because they were pulling, bless you, Your Honor, a trench box, but they were not working directly underneath the trench, the energized lines at that point in time. And so the department said, look, we're going to give you this variance because we recognize you cannot do your work with the, without breaching the 10-foot clearance. But as an overall program, if you're going to work in the future under the lines, then you must do the following. You have to have on the light. You have to have on the limit switch. You have to put on a spotter. You have to paint the lines. So then in the future, if you're going to be working underneath the lines, you would take these actions. On the date of the citation, they were not working underneath the lines. And that's agreed by the testimony of the compliance officer who testified that they were only cited for working next to the energized lines, but not working directly underneath it. And so,
what difference does it make if you're not working directly underneath when the operator Mitchell testifies that, yeah, from time to time when I'm using this excavator, I've got to swing it from side to side, and it's a 20-foot boom, and we know that the high voltage lines are 10 to 15 feet above the center of the roadway.
Well, the limit switch only limits it up and down. Mm-hmm. It didn't limit the excavator from rotating from side to side. And so the limit switch would keep it from going up.
Right.
And so if you're working directly underneath the line, then of course that would prevent that.
Right.
But at the time, on February the 11th, the line was to the side, and there's clear testimony from Mr. Mitchell, the operator, that if it went up, it would not come into contact whether or not there was a limit switch or not. And so we believe that we have met the terms of demonstrating that there were no feasible means, because the means that the department argues were feasible were not for the situation at hand. Had we been working underneath the lines at the time, then, of course, the citation could have addressed that point.
Didn't Paddock and didn't the review judge find that the boom was when he was he happened to be driving by and he saw that the boom was within 10 feet of the line?
That is correct, Your Honor. He was within 10 feet of the line off to the side, but not working directly underneath it.
So why does that matter?
Well,
I mean,
it does.
The point is you can't be within 10 feet of a live wire when you're using that type of equipment.
Can I answer that question?
May he?
Sure.
Well, the answer is that we agreed that normally if you can stay with that, you have to stay 10 feet away. But in order for them to dig this trench with this excavator, they had, by necessity, to come within 10 feet. I mean, there's just no, it's impossible for them to do the job without it unless the department expected Colucio to dig this project by hand, which, of course, everybody agreed, including the Superior Court judge, that it was impossible to dig 250 feet of a trench, 13 feet deep, 5 feet wide, by hand. You had to use an excavator.
May it please the court. My name is Paul Weideman, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Department of Labor and Industries in this matter. Frank Coluccio Construction violated a WSHA regulation that required it to keep its excavator more than 10 feet from high voltage lines. This violation exposed its workers to the risk of death or serious injury by electrocution. This court should affirm the board's rejection of Coluccio's infeasibility defense for two reasons. First, substantial evidence supports the board's findings that there were several feasible alternative methods that Coluccio could have used to protect its workers that it did not. And second, substantial evidence supports the board's finding that Coluccio could have complied with the compliance regulations. Before proceeding further, I'd like to briefly address 2 points by counsel. First, the hazard in this case is not limited to the excavator pulling the trench box on February 11th. Each time the excavator breached the 10-foot zone, Coluccio's workers were at risk of death or serious bodily injury due to electrocution. And although there was testimony during cross-examination of the inspector about the reason for the citation, the inspector properly refocused the board on the fact that the reason he issued the citation was for a violation of the regulation. He observed one instance of that violation on February 11th, but then opened an investigation, did further work. It's undisputed that Coluccio violated the regulation on several occasions. All of the employees who testified in this matter stated that the excavator came within 10 feet.
So what was the substantial evidence that showed that there were not feasible alternatives? Or there were feasible alternatives?
The board's specific finding was that feasible alternative protection was not in use, and there were at least five means that Coluccio could have used to ensure that its workers were safe. And these included the limit switch on the excavator controls, the nylon sling on the excavator arm, a full-time spotter who was not the foreman with other duties on site who had authority to stop the work, a functioning strobe light on the excavator to alert those nearby who were also at risk of electrocution that the excavator was near the lines, and a painted line on the ground as a reminder of visual clearance. And I can address each of those in turn. The question of the limit switch was addressed during counsel's argument. That is a device that is placed on the excavator's controls in order to limit the height and swing of the excavator's arm to preset limits.
And is there no dispute that this excavator did not have a limit switch?
That is correct. It's undisputed. One of Coluccio's employees testified that there was no limiting device, either a limit switch or a nylon sling on the excavator arm, and the inspector also concurred in that assessment.
Was there evidence that those alternatives were ones that could have been done?
Certainly. Coluccio, in fact, after the inspection, proposed in its variance application to put a limit switch on the excavator. And when the work resumed, it resumed with the limit switch on the excavator. There was testimony in this case that the limit switch limits not only the up and down motion of the excavator arm, but can also limit the swing. The Rick Evans, who was the department's high voltage compliance supervisor, testified to that fact. Your honors are correct that it is, it makes no difference whether Coluccio was operating directly beneath the lines. The standard that has been promulgated by the department is a 10-foot standard in all directions. It applies even when the excavator isn't working beneath the lines. The feasible alternative means that Coluccio has to provide in order to protect its workers applies regardless of where the excavator is working. And again, Coluccio ignores the fact that it itself proposed the limit switch after the inspections, making it very clear that it was feasible to use before the inspector came on site.
Do you concede that, and you didn't list this, do you concede that asking Metro to switch off the power was not a feasible alternative?
No. And the page 2 of Exhibit 2 is the variance application on February 14th, and that states Metro will not de-energize the lines. That is 3 days, though, after the inspection. And there's no evidence in this record that Coluccio contacted Metro and requested de-energization of the lines.
Futile act? Would it have been a futile act, though?
Probably.
It's possible. It's possible, Your Honor. But if you look at the Harry Crooker and Sons case from the First Circuit, that was a case where involving a very similar federal regulation, the contractor was on a residential street and would have had to provide significant notice to many different affected customers. There was affirmative evidence that the employer presented in that case as part of its affirmative defense that it was even unprecedented to de-energize the lines.
Well, do we have to reach this given the five other alternatives that you've identified?
No, this court does not have to reach that because infeasibility is a two-part test.
Is that a word?
Infeasibility?
Yes.
It's in the statute, isn't it? The statute uses infeasibility.
The judicially created defense uses the word infeasibility. That's from the Long v. Fiber case before the board.
Is it a word?
As far as I know, it's a word. Other OSHA cases...
it's a rhetorical question.
Impossibility has also been used, and that's maybe something that...
Or not feasible. That's another way of describing it.
Or not feasible. Correct, Your Honor. And it's the burden... The burden is on Colucci, as it acknowledges, to prove both parts of the defense, and therefore... whether this court affirms on the fact that there were several, at least five alternative means that Coluccio could have provided, or whether it affirms on the ground that Coluccio could have complied with the compliance requirements, they're both grounds on which this court can affirm. I'd like to briefly touch on the other methods that Coluccio could have used to protect its workers. The nylon sling, like the limit switch, is a method for limiting the motion of the excavator arm. And it's significant in this case that Coluccio had a prior accident with an excavator where it contacted electrical lines. The safety director for Coluccio testified it was operating fine all day, and it suddenly swung and hit the lines. And luckily nobody was injured. Well, a limit switch and a nylon sling are devices that can be placed to prevent that type of accident. And the fact that Coluccio has had a problem with that in the past, I think is very significant.
There was some testimony, wasn't there, that a nylon sling wouldn't be practical for this size excavator?
The excavator operator testified something to that effect. On substantial evidence review, though, that goes to the weight that the board judge gave it.
Was there evidence that contradicted that?
No. But there was evidence that by the inspector, I believe it is on page 25 of his testimony, that the nylon sling prevents motion of an excavator. He didn't specifically talk about this size of excavator. With regard to the spotter, there is some discussion of the spotter in Coluccio's briefing, but significantly, as the board judge found in this case, the foreman who was on site spotting, as he says, most of the time, was at times in the trench helping with side sewer connections. And so there was not a dedicated spotter on site at all times in order to ensure that the excavator did not contact the wires. Again, that is something that Coluccio proposed in its variance application after the fact, saying we'll have a full-time spotter there who's gone through site-specific training to address the hazards on the site, and that spotter will have authority to stop work, and it will not be the foreman because the foreman has other duties. There were other visual cues that Coluccio could have used, including the strobe light and painted line. For all these reasons, substantial evidence supports the board's rejection of the company's infeasibility defense, and this court should affirm the board and sustain the department's citation. Thank you.
Minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. To address the last point, Your Honor, the Department of Labor and Industries issued the citation, and as set forth in the record at page 55, lines 8, starting line 8, I specifically asked the compliance officer, Randy Paddock, your observations were of the excavator pulling the trench box, correct? Correct. And that's what the hazard is that you cited for in this particular case. Answer, correct. And so we were cited specifically for the events on February the 11th, 2011. All of the points that counsel raises, we agree, are things that needed to have been done. In fact, except for the limitation switch, were done after the variance was granted and four times when they would work directly underneath the lines. Mr. Mitchell testified that a limit switch would not have been feasible or needed in this particular case if you're working to the side of it.
But you did install one after the citation, though.
Yes, because...
Why, if it doesn't work?
Well, it would work if you're going to be traveling underneath, because that's what he testified, the limit switch had only prevented it from going up, not from side to side. Mr. Evans, who was not the crane operator, not the excavator operator, he says that he thought you could put in one from side to side. The operator himself said it only limits it from going up. So if you're going to go underneath the line, then that limit switch would prevent the boom from inadvertently going up. And if you're working underneath the line, the spotter is there. Mr. Brown testified that that was his only duty that he would do. He had other duties when they were not working underneath the line, but when they was underneath the line, his only duty was to serve as the spotter. So we're looking at things in different contexts. We're looking at things that needed to be done throughout the rest of the project into the future, for which my client readily said, yes, we want to have a safe project, but we weren't being cited for all of those other activities. We're only being cited for what took place on February the 11th, and that was working on the side where the spotter wasn't needed, the strobe light wasn't needed, the sling wasn't even useful, and clearly it would have been futile to ask Metro to stop all the energy for all of the buses. And so, as a matter of law...
Did you make that argument to the reviewing judge that the citation... facts supporting the citation should only be limited to the February 11th?
We did, Your Honor, and that was...
Did he or she agree?
She did not. She sided with the Department of Labor and Industries and came to the conclusion that there are other feasible means, albeit in a different context, which we didn't do on February the 11th. And our whole argument was those additional things were from a different context and didn't and wouldn't even be applied even with the variance because it was under different circumstance because they were not working underneath the lines.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. And because Klimovich versus DSHS had to be continued on an emergency basis, that concludes our session.
All right. Board is in recess.